Welcome, everybody, to Clinical Pearls. My name is BJ Hamankuli. I am here with my co-host, Tracy. How you doing, Tracy?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
So, Tracy, today we will be talking about AI, artificial intelligence. What do you know about AI, Tracy?
Well, it all came from the movies. So I know we were talking about Jarvis earlier.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Jarvis is the AI-generated person in Iron Man. So, you know, AI is something that has come to full bloom nowadays. So, and I know you have a particular fear about AI. Can you share with our audience what that is?
Well, again, that goes back to the movies. So I'm not fearful so much of it. But, you know, in the older movies, AI takes over at the end typically. Yeah. So I don't think ChatGPT is going to take over. But I am going to be pretty nice to it after mm-hmm. what I learned from Dr. Chatham today.
Well, you need to. So, yes, sir. Dr. Chatham is the director of the Center for Teaching here at UAB. And I hope you guys tune in to a wonderful discussion on artificial intelligence and how we as faculty can incorporate it in our classes. So remember to like and share on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Thank you very much.
Perhaps one of the most frequently expressed concerns about the widespread use of artificial intelligence applications is the potential impact on academic integrity. We're talking today about the use of artificial intelligence in the university classroom, including the benefits and challenges. We are going to discuss innovative ways to integrate tools into teaching practice while addressing ethical considerations. And this may span from the classroom into general teaching in our healthcare facilities. Dr. Amy Chatham is the director at the Center for Teaching and Learning here at UAB. She has a deep passion for fostering meaningful learning experiences and a commitment to faculty development. She holds a doctorate in health education and promotion, where her work and teaching have focused on enhancing engagement and comprehension in diverse learning environments. Her decades of teaching experience span various levels of education, from undergraduate and graduate programs to community based education and K-12 instruction. Her classroom has been characterized by its inclusivity, fostering an environment where every student's unique perspective is valued and integrated into the learning process. I wish I had been in one of your classrooms. Amy, they sound fantastic. So thank you for being here. We're excited to talk with you and can't wait to hear what you have to say about this new technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to UAB and your role now at the CTL.
Yeah, I came to UAB initially in the early 1990s. I had been in the Peace Corps and found myself in Birmingham, Alabama, and I started a master's in public health program in international health, a degree that no longer exists in the School of Public Health. I worked for the School of Public Health when I finished, and really enjoyed my time at UAB and then stayed home having children. I have four children, so I stayed home for a number of years. And then in 2011, somebody contacted me and asked me if I'd be interested in teaching graduate level academic writing out of the graduate school. And so I said yes, and I started as an adjunct and went from there to the School of Public Health. I was in charge of service learning and undergraduate research for about 5 years, was assistant dean for undergraduate education in the School of Public Health for 2 years, and now I am the director for the Center for Teaching and Learning at UAB. And so know a lot about how UAB works, mm-hmm. How it serves the community and its students, and so always excited to move forward.
How long have you been in that role?
My current role, yeah. I've been in a little bit less than a year.
Mm-hmm. What do you love the most about that?
Really, it is interacting with teaching faculty. My passion really is teaching. Mm-hmm. And so being able to work with teachers from all the different schools and offering them opportunities to enhance their teaching, finding ways for them to better work with this generation of students as they change has really been, I think, what's most exciting for me is just those interactions.
There are always cool things mm-hmm. going on at the CTL. I've done so many fun things over there and learned so much from the different workshops and things that you have. So thank you for continuing that.
So, you know, for today's topic, obviously we're talking about AI, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, every time that I think of AI, you know what comes to my mind, Tracy? you know, Iron Man.
Robots, yeah.
With yeah. Jarvis, right? And just, that's, I think that's how, in my mind, it all just connects together with what Jarvis is able to do.
Right.
That's the AI in Iron Man. So tell us what AI is. What is generative artificial intelligence?
Absolutely. So generative AI, it refers to tools or the technology that uses deep learning so that we can create text, images, and content that is somewhat unique, and it's based on information that it was trained on. So huge amounts of information are fed into it, and it's a predictive modeling, so it's guessing what we want it to tell us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. So that brings up so many. We could talk for hours. Yeah, my mind just exploded. So we'll get into this, I think, a little bit about the training it. But how did you become interested in this? Because it's blown up over the last, I guess, how many years?
Well, it was recent. ChatGPT was launched in November of 2022. And so it's been just over a year and a couple of months since that came on the scene. I mean, AI in different formats, we talked about Jarvis and Iron Man, has been around for a decade, really, since about 2010, 11 is when we first started seeing what it could do. Mm-hmm. But this generative AI, have either of you been into ChatGPT? Mm-hmm. Okay, so right.
After
so
your presentation.
Right, you have the prompt and you can ask it to do something.
Yeah.
And then you can ask it for more detail, right? So it, but you asked the question, how did I become involved? When I became the director for the Center of Teaching and Learning, part of the job was to really take the lead in educating our faculty how to use it in the classroom. So there had been a report that was put out by a task force last summer. They met to put together a report on AI for the UAB community, and that lives on our website if you want to visit it and look at the report. So what I've been doing is really making the rounds, going to the schools. I came to the School of Nursing. I've been to optometry. I've been to dentistry, a bunch of different departments on campus. I've met with individual faculty. I've had workshops in the CTL to talk about using it in the classroom. And I think probably the statement that I received from somebody that made me the most proud of kind of the work I'm doing, it was in dentistry recently, and one of the faculty members said, I came in expecting it to be so negative, and how are we going to teach students who are using it to cheat? But you didn't even talk about that. Mm-hmm. You're showing us that it's an opportunity. And to me, that is really what I'm trying to do, is this is just a tool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't need to be afraid. Yeah. It's coming really fast, like a speeding train towards us.
Yes.
And there are fears and there are barriers we're going to need to overcome. But really, it's just a tool. I mean, Google has been with us for a long time. Wikipedia came in, right? And everybody's like, don't cite Wikipedia. It's not correct, right? And we all survived it. The difference between the internet, Google, to now is the speed at which it's coming and how quickly people are realizing what it can do.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's feeling frightening to people.
Sure. It's true.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I can see the teacher in you and how you navigated, you know, just the impression of the faculty members had and on how AI would impact us, right? And how you navigated all that and keep navigating it.
But how did you get past that? Did you feel that at first?
So, you know, it was funny. I applied for the position and was hired for the position. They're like, oh, by the way. So I had to set up an account. And this is what I encourage when I go out and talk to faculty. Don't be afraid. Set up an account, right? They say not to use your UAB email. They're going to ask you for an email. You use your Gmail. Nobody's going to come after you if you use your UAB email. And I just set up an account and I just decided to make myself use it for something every single week, like asking it for the best structure for a presentation, say, or I've agreed to take over an environmental justice class, this work on it this summer and start next fall. And so just asking it, design an environmental justice course. And it is amazing what it can do. It can get you from zero to something really fast. It doesn't get you to the final product.
Right.
Not everything it offers you is perfect, right? It may be biased. There may be inaccuracies. But it gets you from zero to something really fast.
Wow.
Someone mentioned the term scaffolding to me.
Yeah.
Does that apply here? It provides a scaffold.
It like does. A lot. There are a lot of different free AI versions out there, right? ChatGPT is what we know, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Google, right? It's the one that we all talk about and know. It loves giving you a very long list, like, and often a very redundant mm-hmm. list of, you know, you asked for this. Okay, so here's all the possibilities. And there's a lot of redundancies in this list, but here's the list. If you use something like Google Bard, for instance, I find it's a little bit more, there's a complexity to it that's a little bit less like just a list. So I would say certainly use whichever one you want to. When we use it in the classroom, one thing I like to mention to faculty is because of equity issues, to go ahead and make sure if you're going to include it in as part of a class, to use the free versions mm-hmm. because UAB does not provide AI to us at this point. So it is really vital that all the students have equal access to the same product. Mm-hmm. And things like ChatGPT 3.5, it was trained on information prior to 2021, so up until 2021. So really anything that's happened in the last 2 years, it doesn't know about yet because it has not been fed kind of that open access. All of that information that's out there has not been fed through it yet. That is in the paid versions. And, you know, there's a lot of belief that eventually everything will be a paid version, but we will see.
Yeah. Okay.
So you mentioned deep learning earlier.
Mm-hmm, I did.
What exactly is that?
Yeah. So the way that AI works is really based on mimicking our neural networks in our brain. So, and it is fed this huge amount of information to allow it to be predictive. Mm-hmm. So it's because it mimics human intelligence, right? Thus the artificial intelligence, the name, right? Mm-hmm. It does what we can all do, right? When we think critically, it has been trained to do that. So without human intervention, other than a prompt, it can give us something. And that's why it's called deep learning. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so how does AI help students achieve that?
Yeah, well, I've seen it used a lot of different ways as I've been out talking to faculty. I'm going to talk about how faculty can use it first. Okay. So, you know, what I have seen is, I mentioned kind of these inherent biases and inaccuracies that are part of when we Google things, right? It's not all right, right? Yeah, I mean, correct. It's not all what we want it to be or giving us the information we're looking for. It's the same with AI. Oftentimes, it will give you something that's totally inaccurate or it is an incredibly biased viewpoint, say. And so really teaching students to think critically about that, right? Uh-huh. So we need to validate what we're receiving through AI, mm-hmm. but also acknowledge the biases and think about ways to overcome those. Mm-hmm. So it's just so that, and I have seen students do this really effectively over in the Department of English. They're using it extensively in the School of Business. I've seen it used in history. You can imagine historical content, right? There's a lot of misinformation and disinformation associated with historical. It's all about whose perspective it was from.
Sure.
And so teaching it using AI give students that opportunity to really think critically. Mm-hmm. So that's one way. And I've also, in hearing students interviewed, you know, our students at UAB all come to us with different levels of prior knowledge, right? And when we learn new things, it's all built on what we knew before.
Correct.
And we connect it to things, right?
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. But when you have a room full of students, especially in School of Nursing, I know you all have large classes. You don't know that everybody's coming in with the exact same level of knowledge.
Sure.
AI can be used as almost like a personal tutor to get them where they need to be just by asking it question after question after question to get their knowledge where it needs to be. Because it is, somebody made the comment about AI that when you Google like restaurants nearby, right, it will give you a list of every restaurant within the 5 mile radius or whatever you set it to. But when you ask something like AI for a list of restaurants, it's going to try to curate the list to your tastes because it's figuring out who you are as it works with you. I mean, it's bizarre. Like if you talk to it politely, it starts talking back to you politely. Like if you use please and thank you, it will write back to you just like that. It knows to do that. And it's so, not for everybody.
You know, on that restaurant topic, mm-hmm. I've actually used it to pinpoint an exact kind of restaurant I want.
Right.
So with Google, you can ask, find me restaurants within this radius, right? With AI, you can go in there and ask, I want a Mexican restaurant with this star rating within this radius, and it will give you that list. So that's right. How specific it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like it from an academic standpoint with the whole concept of scaffolding, right?
Right.
It gives me a background or somewhere to start in terms mm-hmm. of if I'm researching something, like, right? And I don't know where to start. So I can ask it, and then it'll give me a foundation.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's me who goes in there to kind of make sure that that foundation is credible. To begin with, yeah.
So is my ChatGPT, it becomes different than BJ's ChatGPT?
It will, absolutely. Your account will. Because I've even tried, right, if you give it the same prompt.
Yes, that's
at different times, the answer will be different.
That's what I was going to
ask. So there's a level of uniqueness, and that's where when we talk about this artificial intelligence and what it is, it is almost unique. Each response is unique, which is how that can be.
Yeah, how does
with, but
how
it? Know? But that is, I don't know either. But that is how I have found it to be. It does not give me the same information. When you go into your account, what's nice is you can save your all of your questions. Right, you can ask it to save them, or it will automatically save them, and then you can delete the ones you don't want. But it's just great if you're working on something to just go back and it's all still there, which I. Again, is a nice beneficial yeah. mm-hmm. part of the tool, right? Is sure. that right? It's if you can come back to it later and kind of pick up where you left off. Yeah. Whereas when we Google things, right, it's gone if we don't cut it, paste it, send it to ourselves, exactly. kind of thing. Yeah.
And is there a way that you teach people to enter into the request bar?
Yeah.
What it is like? How do you
Yeah, you're referring to prompt generation, and okay. it is a whole science, right? I mean, there are courses you can take in prompt generation, and all these have sprung up in the last year and a half. And there's just all of these levels that you can add. And BJ, you were talking about that, right? Is you can say you want this, and you can say you want this. And so, for instance, when we talk about, academic misconduct, I hate to point that out, but I'll give an example of what a student could do, right? If they're in a class and they need to write a 5-paragraph essay and they have whatever the instructor gave them, they could go into ChatGPT and say, please write a 5-paragraph essay to this prompt. Make it sound as though the writer is a sophomore in college who is from the Southeastern United States. Whose English is a second language. I mean, and you can do all those things. And so what's nice is, again, for users, is as you receive your, your feedback from ChatGPT, the list, you can then go in and tweak it. So you can say, now I want you to do this. Now I want you to do this. So you can keep working on it and working on it and working on it. To make it more and more like what you want it to sound like. It's fascinating, though, because faculty who have used it in classes, because they're asking students to cite and verify everything that comes out of it, a lot of them say it's just faster to do it myself.
Yeah, I was thinking that as you were saying, yes. tweaking it.
So yes, it's because like editing it's, a paper. Mm-hmm. but I mean, that I think that is like the big fear, right, when it first came out is, it's how are we ever going to see student writing again? Right.
Yeah.
That was a concern.
What's your response to that?
Can ChatGPT and these other generative AI platforms be used to cheat? Yes. But so can Google and so can pretty much anything else. I don't think that's students' intent. And so I don't think we need to come at it looking as though it's only a tool for people to cheat. I think we need to see it as a resource, and we really need to have open and frank conversations with our students. We need to be really clear about expectations in our class. One of the things we're rolling out of the CTL is the syllabus statements. Mm-hmm. So whether or not you will allow students to use AI for all of their assignments, for specific assignments, or for none of their assignments. But don't just put that in your syllabus. You also need to discuss it with the students and talk about the why you're allowing it or why you're not. And if you're allowing it, what is the format they need to use for those citations that mm-hmm. I was talking about? Because like I said, I think we can jump really quickly to, UAB used to have a version of Turnitin for mm-hmm. AI. It was not terribly effective. It was about 1 in 20 submissions would be a false positive. So we'd be accusing of somebody of cheating 1 in 20 times who wasn't.
Yes.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. We have a new version that we've just rolled out, and it is called Zero GPT, and it's better. But I still think before turning anybody over to academic misconduct or even accusing them, is to have a conversation. If you suspect, mm-hmm. have a conversation with the student first before you do anything else. That would be my recommendation. Because what we know is, and hearing from faculty, especially in the area of writing, if you put your paper through Grammarly, say, guess what? It works mm-hmm. through the use of AI. So then when you put your paper into this AI detector, it's going to come up as AI generated because it's been fed through Grammarly. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us want a grade for content. If we're not teaching grammar, we don't want a grade for grammar. We want to grade for content. And just like we don't want people to not use spell check. We love spell check, right? People who struggle to spell love spell check. Yeah. And we as instructors don't want to look at misspelled words.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. So really speaking to students, if you suspect, really directly.
Yeah. So do faculty know that, there's this Zero GPT
it's offered,
can incorporate in terms if they suspect a paper is AI generated?
Yeah, it's all in Canvas. So it's all in Canvas, just like where Turnitin has always lived. And you do have to set it up for the assignments to go through it. So you do have to set that up. It is relatively new to campus, but they do offer trainings at e-learning. Okay. So that is available.
You mentioned earlier, I forget how you said it, but it was about teaching the new generation of students. And this spans across not just in our classrooms, but in mm-hmm. our healthcare settings and our preceptors and us, mm-hmm. Teaching the new, the newbies on our floors. And, how is it that we can connect with the new generation, and how are they using tools like this and expecting to be able to use these kinds of tools, because that's how they're growing up.
Right.
So can you talk about that relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. Generation Z, and they're the young people who are between the ages of 26 down to about 13, if I'm right. Mm-hmm. And they have had access to technology like no generation before. Mm-hmm. I mean, as soon as parents were willing, they would have had a cell phone, which is essentially a computer in their pockets or purses for them to utilize. This generation, one of the fascinating things and that I speak about in the workshop that I offer on this is when we think about social media and what platform they use, this generation go to YouTube. Mm-hmm. That is their social media kind of mm-hmm. thing of choice. And so they learn, they have all this constant input of information into their brains all the time. I've walked into households that have younger children and they're not watching television. They're not watching the Disney Channel. They're watching YouTube. And I've talked to a number of faculty who say that this generation, it's fascinating. In the past, students would have shown up and realized that they had a lot to learn because they didn't really know anything. Mm-hmm. Students now come into our classrooms thinking they know everything already because they've learned it on YouTube or a TikTok video or whatever it is. And so there's this unteaching that faculty have to do to address that misinformation, disinformation oftentimes before then they start the real teaching. And so I think we just need to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And then also with AI, what I have heard, I'm recently talking to a faculty member in health professions who is teaching for the first time at UAB, and she wanted to incorporate AI into a PhD level research course. And so, you know, she built this course around that, and she said she connected with the students almost immediately because they were so excited to be given permission to utilize it. Now, again, they're using it in class together at the, from the very beginning to see what it can do and what it can't do. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know our Office of Research for faculty who want to write, right? We want to publish. We want to get grants.
Yes.
What are the rules for all of us when we want to write papers or we want to write a grant? Can you use AI? Can you not? Well, so I was just on a call the other day with the Office of Research, and it really depends. Like for journals, journals are having real quickly to put together rules about utilizing it. Our Office of Research currently just says follow the rules of the grantor or follow the rules of the journal. And so, but I, in talking to faculty who are, they, again, it gets you from zero to something really fast. Yes. I come back to that. So it's not writing their entire grant for them, but it certainly makes the process more effective and faster. And this younger generation, part of what we know about this younger generation is they're a little impatient, right? They don't wait for things, right? Because they haven't had to. Everything's almost immediate, right? You don't have to wait till a movie comes on the TV, right? Or the next episode a week later. Everything's immediate. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's where AI's, how fast it is, I think, really kind of jives with this generation.
When can a faculty member here at the school, at the UAB, go to learn more about, you know, the benefits of AI in the classroom, how they can navigate AI, and answer some questions from students if they get any questions regarding AI?
Absolutely. Well, I would say, first of all, visit the UAB CTL website, and we have a AI resources tab, and there is that report that I mentioned that was put together by a task force last summer. So I would start there. We have a Using AI in the Classroom workshop series. Our next one is next Friday. And so we'll be talking about academic misconduct at that one. And then we've got a number that will follow. Also, invite us. Invite us to your faculty meetings. Invite us to your departmental meetings. If you want to meet one-on-one, I have met with a number of faculty who want to use it, who want to sit down and talk about it one-on-one. We just have a lot of resources. And I also wanted to mention, if your students are looking for resources, Brooke Becker, who's one of our librarians, she's the media specialist, and she is tackling this head on for the students. And so really would recommend you looking for her.
Okay. We've talked a lot about benefits, but aside from the cheating aspect or possibility of that, what are some other challenges that we're facing with this?
You know, how fast it's coming, I think, is certainly a challenge. I mean, how are we going to adapt? I also think asking faculty to adapt to this on the heels of adapting to COVID is a lot. And I think faculty are a little bit tired, a little bit burnt out, and would, you know, kind of want to have a normal semester where things aren't hybrid and people aren't in masks and all of those things. And here we are now saying, okay, you've got to do this and this and this. You know, have a syllabus statement, decide what your feelings are about how the use of AI in your classroom. Is it the right class to use it or not? And then asking them to put this in the syllabus statement, talk to their students. Again, with what class time is this all going to happen? So I think that's a challenge as well. Yeah. So, you know, it's inaccuracies, it's biases. I think everybody needs to really be aware of those things so that you can look out for those and make the students aware and you be aware. So, and it can be a teachable moment, right? I mean, as citizens, all of us need to be aware of that. Yeah. So,
you know, you mentioned Google. I remember when Google came around, there was a lot of misinformation on Google. Yeah. So I think we are also going to learn to discern some of that misinformation that AI generates over time. I think it's just something that would take time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. We've done it before and we can do it again. I think it's the speed that's making people really kind of anxious because it's here.
And I think it's here. Yeah. You can't ignore it anymore. Yeah. And I think I think back to movies, like you said, Jarvis, and just the AI movies where it takes over the world and, humanity. I mean, I think that the older people like myself,
it's here.
I'm a little nervous to type this in because then it's going to know me. And what if it doesn't like me?
It's going to start thinking for you now, right?
Yes. Right. So maybe that's a little bit of why. But excited to use it. I did create an account after your presentation here.
Right.
And put in some things. I forget what I asked it. Oh, I think I asked it for a recipe.
Okay.
And it gave me a really nice recipe for like some chicken parmesan or something like that. I haven't tried it yet, so I don't know how it would taste. But it did it. Just spit it right out in like a second. So faster than I could Google a recipe and pick which one I wanted, it gave me one. So a lot of interesting uses. So maybe I'll try what you've said and try to use it more often for different things and just get more use of it and try to be very nice to it.
Yeah, be polite.
What else do you want it to cover here? It's such a big topic, and for 30 minutes, we really can't cover everything, but I'd love to know if there are any other burning issues. What do you want people to know about?
You know, there's a lot of great articles, especially in the area of higher ed. I was reading an article recently from Inside Higher Ed. You know, the Chronicle has articles. The AACNU recently had a webinar. Educate yourself as you have time. And I know people are busy, so I'm not saying, you know, go read everything out there, but find an article and read it. My husband works in the School of Medicine, and he often sends me articles that he comes across about AI. And just pay attention. I that's what I would recommend. And I also really want to implore people to just not be afraid. It's just a tool, and it's a tool that we're going to use. I mean, it's really nothing apart from human intelligence. It's not replacing human intelligence. But, you know, we are going to be called upon, our students are going to be called upon to use it in their workplaces. So I think ignoring it for too long is really a bad idea and not really an option for an institution of higher ed, that we do need to face this.
Yeah. You know, I think for the faculty member out there that's concerned about cheating, I mean, I would say that if you have a student that you know very well, right? If two semesters ago they were a subpar writer, right, and all of a sudden they become a very good writer, well, that's a telltale sign that maybe I should look into something that's, if you do not encourage AI in your course, right? So those are some of the things that they can be on the lookout for.
Yeah, and I think from talking to faculty, I think we do have detectors like, oh, this isn't student writing. I mean, I was reviewing applications for a fellowship and received an application with a personal statement that so obviously no student wrote. It didn't really address the prompt. And so the group, the faculty group that I was a part of, you know, they wanted to yell academic misconduct. But I'm like, I just want to talk to this person and ask a question. So I didn't say, did you use it? I said, tell me about your decision to use AI to write your personal statement.
Oh, interesting.
Just in a very curious way. Yeah. And it was, you know what, it was... He was not selected for the fellowship, I will be honest, but it was a good way to give him an opportunity to kind of own, well, I was in a hurry. You know, it was quick. I thought it would be better, you know, because I don't think he even read it. And so, again, I think, I know some students are very savvy, but, you know, some are, it's because they've waited till 11:49 to get in that assignment that's due at midnight, right? And so I don't think they're going to be able to. To sneak there because it'll be obvious to us that it is not student writing.
Yeah.
I do not want to end on academic misconduct.
No,
if we
let's
cannot
end
on something,
end
on something really
on
positive.
Something Give us a positive statement to end on.
Yeah. I mean, UAB, as I look at other institutions of higher education, I do think UAB is really in an exciting place to move forward here. Mm-hmm. There is a graduate certificate being offered through the School of Medicine, you know, so artificial intelligence in healthcare. So it's a certificate that's available to our students. So just being aware that, like, I think we have decided, even though individual faculty have a choice with academic freedom to decide whether or not to use it at this point or not, I don't think we're ignoring it. And I think that's incredibly positive. I think faculty are open to discussing it with their students. And I think we want to hear from the students about their thoughts about it. And I think this is just one more opportunity for us to move forward in the realm of higher education.
Thank you so much.
It's a good point. That's a good ending point too. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Cheatham. And for our listeners, we hope that you guys did learn something new about AI, and hopefully that you will have an open mind to it. And moving forward, hopefully that it helps you as faculty members. Thank you very much, and hopefully that you join us at our next episode of Clinical Prologues.